Welcome in, everybody, to episode number 150 of the Hippies and Cowboys podcast. My name is Garrett McKee. I'll be your host today on this one. And we have a great episode coming up for you. It is Coulter Wall season, everybody. On July 14th, 2023, Coulter will release his new album, Little Songs, 3 years since the release of his last album. And in my opinion, this is Coulter at his absolute best that we've heard from him so far. I have not been able to stop listening to this album ever since I first got my hands on it. And I can say with full confidence that you all are going to enjoy it just as much as I do. Coulter was generous enough to sit down with me for about an hour and talk about the new record, as well as his development in his songwriting, his style, and the growth of his career over the years. We also get into the fact that this album will be released by his longtime record label, La Honda Records, in collaboration with RCA Records. So without further ado, let's get after it. Thanks for tuning into the podcast and enjoy the show.
Okay.
Here we go. Coulter Wall, how the hell are you?
I'm well, Garrett. How are you?
I'm good. It's melting down here in the heat in Texas right now.
Yeah, I bet. It's not quite so bad up here. We've actually had kind of a stretch of cool weather, so it's been nice.
Yeah, that's all right. You guys dealing with too much of that smoke from Alberta anymore, or is that all kind of fucked off?
No, it's been around. Today, the wind kicked up, so today's a little clearer. I'm actually in the hat right now.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Alberta, I had some chores to do at home this morning, and then I had come to town to pick up a part that I needed and just run a few other little errands while I'm here. But no, it's not too smoky. It's been sort of in and out week by week there. We've been getting it kind of in droves, but it ain't too bad today.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, man. Well, we've been trying to do this for a while. it's good to finally get a chance to chat with you on here. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people out there who are happy to hear from you, because I mean, you notoriously don't really do too many interviews really at all, let alone podcasts. So thanks for doing this. I do appreciate you generously donating your time here today.
Yeah, well, I'm not really a big talker, I guess, but it's easier with people I know and people I at least somewhat familiar with, such as yourself. So
yeah.
Happy to be on, man.
Ah, I appreciate it. We got to know each other a bit there when we were touring up in Canada this spring. You've had kind of a busy year, honestly, so far. I mean, you did a rip down in the States in January, you did a rip down in the States in February, and then we scooted up to Canada and fucked around up there a little bit. That was a pretty good time. And I appreciate you dragging me out there for that one too. That was awesome. I had a great time, and it was cool to just fucking see you and the band like every night, just do your thing, like, and be a small part of what you guys had going on up there. Those were some pretty special shows, and those people in Canada were foaming at the mouth to see you play up there again. So it was cool.
Well, we were glad to have you for a lot of reasons, but it was nice. It was nice for me to have another Canadian in the crew, because usually I'm kind of the only one, and everybody else is from down south. So it was nice to have somebody Team Canada up there with me. But no, it was kind of a busy run of shows, I guess, this winter, more than I've done in a while, anyways. And there were some good ones. There were some interesting ones, I guess we'll say, for lack of better words, but. We were glad to have you on board, man. You did a bang up job.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was good. The guys could kind of direct some of their stupid Canadian questions to me rather than you. I'm sure you felt relieved to not have to answer all that.
Yeah, it's nice. Never know what they're gonna come up with, them guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, man. Well, I was gonna start off just by talking about that run, and just because, like I said, it was the first time you'd played in Canada other than the Pinocchio Stampede last summer. That was the first like tour you've done in Canada since probably like before COVID, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would say, I don't know, probably at least since maybe 2018 or something like that, maybe even earlier than that. But it had been a minute, really. Other than playing the rodeo in Pinoca, it had been a moment since I played anywhere up here, so it felt pretty overdue.
Yeah, right. Like I said, I think people were really happy to see you do that again, and of course, you get the fucking people on Instagram come here, come there, and it's like you finally got back up to Western Canada. I should say that's where. And I mean, that's probably where people appreciate your music the most, honestly, in Canada anyway. So
yeah, well, it's home, I guess. So I should hope so. But yeah, it's funny. I mean, you know, I think people have this idea that most touring musicians or whatever, road musicians, are just constantly out there. And, you know, there was a time when I was constantly out on the road playing a lot, but those days are kind of past now. So you definitely feel like you miss some places, or you don't get to some places enough. It was really good to get to play around home and see some family and friends and stuff during all them dates that we had up here. Felt good.
Yeah, definitely. I felt like I could tell that you were having a good time, like just overall, like throughout the whole period of time, like after spending some time down in the States with you down there, and then comparing that to just how it seemed like you're having a lot of fun up there.
Yeah, I think we had a good time, and I think, you know, that I guess that was sort of the last run of them three big chunks of shows we did this winter, and so it definitely felt like everyone was kind of fine-tuning up into the set, too, and there's always some moving pieces as far as who's picking with who and, you know, getting different guys in the band or whatever, but I think them boys really were starting to kind of figure out by the time we got to them shows up here, and that's always, that makes it a lot easier when everybody's kind of comfortable with the set and comfortable with the material that's being played. So it's easier to have a good time when everyone's fairly at home with what we're doing up there on stage. Whereas, you know, if you're just kind of trying out some new stuff or you hadn't played with the guys for a while, then it's sort of more of a, you kind of have to be on your toes a little bit more, you know, more stressful.
Yeah, especially now, you know, there's got to be a pretty drastic difference in just the way you feel on stage too, playing to these bigger audiences than you were, honestly, pre-COVID. Even like you had such a long break in between, and then coming back and everybody's just going crazy, huge crowds, 5,000-8,000 people sometimes. Like, that's got to add to that, you know, that feeling up there, whether you're feeling loose and everybody's feeling good or everybody's kind of tight and unsure.
Yeah. Well, the room affects the show a lot more than most people probably think. And, they're definitely, you definitely feel the jump when you go from, you know, even just 1,000 or a couple thousand people in difference, like, makes a difference. As you and I both know, like it kind of, I don't know, it's just it's a whole, it totally changes almost every dynamic of the gig when you got that many more people piled into a room, and as far as sound and the vibe of the show and even the set. Like, I mean, we play pretty well the same set most nights of, you know, any particular run, but as far as like the order of the songs or certain additions to it that maybe weren't done the night before, it kind of all is dictated in my head mostly by the crowd and kind of what they're like and what the room's like and where we might happen to be in the country or in the world. So it's sort of like, yeah, it plays a bigger part than most people think, probably just kind of adapting to these bigger rooms and bigger crowds and different kinds of venues and that sort of accommodate that many more people being around. But I shouldn't sound like I'm complaining. I'm grateful we can sell tickets, it's different.
Yeah, it's just fans that are listening to this, a lot of them probably don't realize a lot of that stuff that you're talking about, just how many variables there is night to night and all of those things that you just mentioned.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's get into, I kind of want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, because I feel like there's a lot of people that are curious to kind of hear your thoughts on your own development throughout your career leading up to this record that comes out, everybody, on July 14th. I'm sure you all know that. But we'll be, I'm not sure when this episode's going to come out, but it should be sometime around then. And I wanted to start with, you know, kind of just going back to, you know, the first EP and some of those first records. Just, I know you've talked a few times before about, you know, obviously the changes in the way you've been singing. You kind of made the comment that you learned how to sing over the years. And not only that, but to me, I feel like the content of the songs is obviously entirely different from back then. You kind of had a little more of a darker, you know, folk vibe at the start, and that's kind of developed now into what we know and love, you know, country and western honky tonk music. So, you know, I've heard you comment too in other interviews that you've always been a student of writing and a student of the genre, and I know you're a huge history guy. And so how much of that has, you know, influenced that development for you over the years? Is it just like a change in, you know, after you learned to sing, were you able to be more confident as a writer, and kind of like be able to stretch your voice obviously a little more and come up with does it make you feel more confident as a songwriter now?
I don't know about as a songwriter. It definitely makes me feel more confident as a singer, and it makes me feel, you know, talking about kind of a sort of a shift almost, and not, I guess maybe not so much in, well, yeah, sort of a shift in the genre as far as what I've been sort of doing over the last decade or so. I think figuring out how to sing a little bit better and kind of more to my liking and being influenced by different singers, and trying to sort of emulate other guys, it all is sort of, I don't know, it definitely makes you feel like you can cover more ground as far as like playing different kinds of songs or trying to write different kinds of songs. I don't know, as far as actual writing goes, maybe stylistically, I guess it would kind of opens up your world a little bit as far as what you feel like you can do. Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like, you know, people always say your records are a moment in time and whatever, and that's kind of cliche, but I think it's true because it's like, you know, there's lots of stuff about records I've put out in the past few years that I, you know, if given the chance, I would go back and change, but there's really no point in even thinking that way because they're sort of just a little snapshot of that point in time. And, you know, it's sort of a representation of the kind of who I was at that time, what I was listening to and what I was trying to do, I guess, with these songs. And, you know, whether you like it or not, a few years down the road, that's just what it is. It's just like a picture of yourself. You know, you might go, what the hell was I doing, you know, wearing that, or what, you know, what's going on with this hairdo? But you know, that's all it is a moment in time. I've kind of come to terms with that. I don't know. I think a little bit of change and growth is pretty normal for everybody that is out there trying to make music or trying to make records or whatever. And some people like it, some people don't like it, and you go different directions, and that's just kind of the way it is. I like to see it. I think about some of the artists I like and kind of watching the shifts throughout the years. And I think it's, I don't know, it's neat to see people's progression and sort of whatever they're trying to do at the time. You know, that being said, I think there's variables and constants too. Like, I think there's some things about a lot of my writing and songs and records I put out that have probably kind of always been more or less the same. While at the same time, there's lots of stuff that changes. So I don't know if that answers your question at all. That's
kind of a shitty question. It was kind of open-ended. I was just hoping you'd ramble like that for a little while, because
there you go.
That's my trick. I don't actually ask you anything, Coulter. I just just trick you into talking.
Oh, there you go. You win.
No, you're right though. It's you know, from a fan's perspective too, I personally, I guess I feel like it's boring if an artist is kind of just a one trick pony too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to listen to the same record 5 times over the course of 7-8 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. It's I don't know. I can think of the things that I can think of both scenarios where there's artists that don't waver too much from what they do, and I can appreciate that. And then there's also some that you can hear the difference throughout their records and throughout the decades too. A lot of the time too, it's just sort of like, if you think of like some of my favorite artists are guys that are long dead, you know, and I think about like the changes that were going on just through the passing of time, I guess, as them guys made records. Like you can hear, you know, it's the way they recorded it and the instruments used and stuff. You can hear kind of all of them. You can kind of almost guess like when was this recorded? Okay, well, what, you know, what was going on around this time, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, and then all through, you know, it's like, yeah, I think it's kind of unrealistic to expect someone to just keep pumping out the same thing all the time. But at the same time, like you say, there's some variables and there's some constants, I think, with everybody, where you're going to hopefully people can appreciate some things that kind of are maybe have a little bit more staying power, I guess, than others when it comes to music and storytelling and stuff like that.
You've always, I mean, you've put there's been covers of, you know, obviously your heroes' music on every single record you put out. And I feel like, you know, some fans are always like, oh, well, that song's a cover. But I feel like that's, you know, after hanging out with you a bit and listening to some of the music that you like to listen to in the van and stuff like that, it's like, it's so obvious when, you know, whenever I would hear you talking about music, how much you really dig into that and study it, like I said before. And, you know, you find a way to, there's something special about being able to find a way to take somebody else's song and kind of make, not, you know, not make it your own, but do it your way. And I certainly appreciate that, because I think that's cool. And, you find a way to do that, not only on your records, but like even live, like, you know, you guys were cutting into Strawberry Roan after Plane to See Plainsman. And that even like maybe goes back to what you said earlier, where it's like, okay, I cut this record, you know, a few years down the road. I may not like the way we did it, you know, now, but that's what I did at the time. But you still can go on stage and make it, you know, kind of change it up and make it sound the way you want it to now with the band.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that, something I strive to do anyways. And it's like, you know, like I say, I don't play that many live shows, but when I do, I know that people want to hear some of the, try to pepper in a little bit of something, even if it's just one song from every record or close to that. Just a little taste of each one, just because I feel like people are owed that, you know. And everybody likes different stuff, but you know, that way you can at least cover a little bit of ground from each album. And yeah, just, you know, there's no rule that says you got to do them all exactly the same as you did them on the record. So I try to kind of, I guess, give them, shed a little new light on them and sort of do them the way that I would, that I would think I would do it now if I had made those records now, and sort of go more that way. And I don't know if that's right or wrong. That's just kind of the way I like to do it. And then as far as the covers go, I think it's pretty ridiculous. Like, I don't understand this whole thing that a lot of, like you say, people, fans have this thing like, oh, well, it's just a cover. It's almost like, it's not legitimate because you didn't write it.
Yeah.
Or like, you know,
or it has less value for some reason.
A very modern way of looking at an album, because like, I don't know, especially in country music, you go back to some of them guys that were the biggest stars in country music, or you know, these legends that we like, people like George Jones. George didn't really write many songs.
Yeah.
He did other people's songs, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And, you know, or even like Waylon wrote some really great songs, but most of his catalog and things that I think most of what we know from him, most of what the average country music fan knows from him, more than likely he didn't write those songs. Like I say, he wrote some, but a lot of them he didn't. And So I don't really understand the whole, you know, that whole way of thinking about almost being kind of like, you know, that attitude of, well, it's a cover song. And almost like it doesn't count, you know, that to me doesn't make any sense at all. I loved it. I've always been very adamant about at least putting one cover on every record, just because I like playing other people's songs. I like playing other people's songs most of the time better than playing my own. And we try to do that in the live show too. And if you listen, you know, if you are listening close, not just to my stuff, but anybody's stuff, I think you can hear it there. You can hear the artist's influences. And a lot of times these live shows, maybe kind of almost make a medley out of some of my stuff. If we're playing a song like Playing to See Plainsman, like you said, and then going to Strawberry Roan, well, you know, that those melodies are very similar and the progression is very similar. And it's kind of like, to me, it's like a little look behind the curtain, I guess, of like, well, you know, here's where it all comes from. It's all, this is sort of the making of, you know, and I enjoy doing that. Some people might think like, well, you're giving away your tricks or you're just wasting time playing a cover or something like that. But I find it, I think that's, I enjoy that sort of thing and figuring out where things come from and you know, people's influences and stuff like that. So yeah, I don't think there's nothing wrong with it. And, you know, like I say, at my show, I don't mind doing it because it's my show.
Yeah. It's like, hey, look, I stole a piece of this melody, or, you know, I stole a piece of this chord progression or whatever it may be. And I, like I say, I think that's cool that you are able to connect the dots for people.
Yeah. Well, and I think the, you know, the people that really give a damn, they are probably already have that figured out, or the people that are listening to some of the same stuff I might, they probably can piece that together. And, but not everybody can, or not everybody maybe is as interested in, you know, old songs, I guess, as I am. But, I think it's neat. I like to, I don't mind kind of painting that roadmap of music and figuring out where stuff comes from. I like to do that.
Yeah. Cause every, you know, at the end of the day, every songwriter's a songwriter because they were a fan of another songwriter. You know what I mean? It's all connected.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, that's why I don't get the whole animosity towards people doing covers or people even kind of, you know, using the more traditional progression or melody or something in a new song of theirs. I think that's all perfectly natural. And that's kind of how it's always been as far as country and Western music and folk music and pretty much every other kind as well. It's all, you know, it all comes from somewhere. There ain't much new as far as that goes. It's all come from something.
It's all been done once already. Fans kind of project their own sense of entitlement, I feel like, on artists a lot. It even goes back to what we were talking about even just the change in your sound. You go make a, you know, some artists will go make a weird, like Sturgill Simpson, for example, makes a weird rock and roll record and everybody's coming at his door with pitchforks, you know what I mean? It's just like, well, let him do whatever the hell he wants. But fans want to, like I said, they feel like, I'm a fucking Coulter Wall fan. This is my thing. You know what I mean? And then they kind of project that back onto the artist a lot of the time, I feel like, unfortunately, whether they mean to or not. But, you know, I think it's just a lack of understanding, really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably the best way and the most polite way to put it.
yeah.
Not all fans are like this, but it definitely is a common head where, you know, it's funny because most people, when they care about an artist, especially if it's maybe one that's a little more underground or not as well known or doesn't get radio play or what have you, the one thing you always hear is like, we really respect them and we appreciate this artist because they do what they want to do. They do their own thing. They're independent. They're not listening to whatever the label might be telling them or what's popular, or what sells and what doesn't. And that's that whole, you know, outlaw or whatever word you want to make up thing. People latch onto that and they always kind of claim that as like, that's what we want. And that's what we appreciate from an artist. As long as it's the kind of music that person wants to hear. Right. And then the second that they do something different, it's kind of like, it just turns right away in there. And then, you know, so-and-so might be upset. Well, like, well, why'd you change from, you know, what you were doing before your last record? It's like, well, because I'm doing exactly what I want to do, you know, and maybe it's not the same as the last one. And then sort of like, you know, it doesn't make a whole ton of sense always as far as that goes, just because, I don't know. I think people, like you say, they're not all this way, but some of them do have this sort of almost entitlement about what they think, what they expect and what they think a singer, an artist or a songwriter should do, and how they almost like have this idea for what their career should be. When it's sort of ironic when they get to be like that, because the reason that they claim to, the reason they might like the music in the first place was because it was exactly what that person wanted to do, and they did it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a, it's kind of a backwards way of thinking.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I get it too, 'cause I've been on the other end where I'll, you know, there's someone will put out a record and it'll be, you know, someone I like, or someone that's an influence of mine, and I'm not crazy about it. But I think people obviously, you know, they get, if someone's willing to get that worked up about something, that means they give a damn. So at the same time, you can appreciate that. But, but sometimes it seems like a little bit too much, or like maybe it's a kind of a waste of energy to really worry all that much about that sort of thing, I think.
Yeah. those are the people, those are the people screaming out requests at shows too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like that's a good kind of connector to what I wanted to ask you too, or not really ask you, just comment too, about how it's really impressive to see that you've kind of been able now, as your career has grown and things have changed, obviously, that you're kind of able to bring Western music specifically back to kind of a different prominence that I really feel like they're, you know, and this is not to talk anybody else down who's out there making good Western music. But you've really been able to use, I guess, if we call it like your platform or your popularity, to kind of bring that to audiences that may not have dug into that stuff before. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, well, I'm glad that that's the case, and I don't fully really understand how that's all worked out. But I'm glad for it. I think when I started out, you know, I think subconsciously there's always kind of a Western influence in everything I did, just on account of where I grew up, being from, you know, being from the West, Western Canada, and, you know, being kind of from that world. But it wasn't ever like, I didn't set out to do that originally, and I ended up writing them kinds of songs, and I didn't really have that in mind. So I think it always kind of had, it was always a part of there, but maybe a little bit more subconsciously. And then, you know, fast forward a few years later and a few albums later, and it kind of become more of a, you know, something that I wanted to do, and something that I was intentionally wanted to kind of make part of my sound, or whatever you might call it.
That lifestyle became more part of your life too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I kind of dug my heels more into that, and, you know, live in the more, well, you know,
classic sing about what you know situation, right?
Exactly. You know, it's like, yeah, I think that's so important. And again, it's another cliche, but it holds true all the time. 'Cause I think most people are smart enough. They can pick up when somebody's, you know, if they're singing a song, and maybe it, you know, you can pick up when you hear something that's maybe disingenuous.
Yeah.
And, not saying that, you know, you have to live every experience you've ever sung about, 'cause you know, I've got murder ballads and I've never murdered anybody. But as far as like kind of an overall,
just to clear
that up. Yeah, I've actually surprisingly had people ask that question of, did that really happen?
But, oh yeah,
yeah. But anyways, I think like overall, people can tell when something's sort of maybe more of a put on, and I've been accused of that too. But it don't bother me, because I know, you know, I know the way I live, and I live this lifestyle pretty well every day of my life when I'm not on the road. So, yes, I think sometimes people do worry too much about, you know, the whole authenticity thing. But at the same time, I think it's important to have some kind of rooted reality. And, you know, there should be a connection between your day-to-day life and the art you make. And I think there is, whether you know it or not. I think that that's just kind of a universal truth. So, I'm grateful to be able to live the way I do. And, you know, sort of, if I'm not playing shows, I'm at home and I'm doing the stuff I want to do, which just happens to be, you know, ranch work and living out there in the middle of nowhere. And that's, I guess that plays a part in sort of the, like we talked about before, the progression of the kind of songs that a person writes or the way your music changes. It's, it all, it also has a lot to do with the way, you know, the kind of life that you live. And, yeah, it's, I don't know. It's all connected one way or another.
Yeah, it kind of perfectly leads into what I wanted to talk to you about next was, and this is probably a, maybe not the best way of putting it, but it's the most simple and blunt way I could put it. But there's a certain power that you get that comes along with popularity when people start picking up on your art and buying tickets to your shows and, like I say, just growing in popularity as your career develops. And you've kind of been able to take that power, like I said, and you know, like I said, bring Western music back into people's ears who may not have been familiar with that type of music before. And you've been able to now, you know, that power grants you the ability to tour when you want and where you want and kind of dictate that and not have to be grinding it out on the road constantly. And it affords you, like you say, it affords you the ability to do whatever the hell you want. And nobody, you don't need to answer to anybody, you know. You need to answer to very few people or nobody at all, right? And so, I think that's obvious now, is that you're at a place that you've been able to take that power and that platform and build a life for yourself outside of music, that's outside of the blue van.
Well, and I think that that's why it's very important to me to, you know, I think music will always be part of my life and you know, it'll always play a role. It is my career, I guess you'd say.
Right.
I think a lot of people have a tendency to get lost up in that, and it's really easy. It's a great big thing, and it's really easy to get kind of drowned in that world of the music industry or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, you're obviously, if you're going to do it, you got to have a foot in the door with all that stuff and an understanding of the way that it all works. But as far as some of the culture that's around that, I guess, for lack of a better word, or one that I can come up with, the sort of the culture around that music world, a lot of times to me is so distant from reality. And as when you talk about country music, it's, you know, I guess that's the irony of it, is like, I think it's really easy to get sort of this, if you can fall into that industry world a little bit too much, or even just like the scene or whatever it might be in places like Nashville or Austin or whatever. And you're immediately kind of, whether you like it or not, you're sort of kind of out on this island that doesn't have anything to do with real life and like day-to-day people and what, you know, what the genre is all about. You know, the class of people and the culture and the world that the genre is supposed to be all about, you kind of are separated from it. So it's always been important to me to, you know, I've seen that happen to lots of people. And it probably happened to me to some degree at one point. I've seen people get sucked into that and then just sort of get torn away from what's real.
They may not even know they're in it at that point, you know.
I don't think most people do, and I think it's a really easy thing to happen, because obviously, you know, this is from the point of view of the person trying to make a living or make a career, you think that you need to be kind of totally engulfed in all this. And but I think as far as, you know, it doesn't do anything to service the song or the art. If anything, I think it does the opposite. It kind of hinders it. because again, it's just not really founded in any kind of reality about normal day. Well, normal, I guess I shouldn't use that word, but you know, it's not real. It's kind of this weird little scene that only exists in this sort of world of music. It doesn't have anything to do with regular working people. So it's always been important to me to really stay away from all that as much as possible. That's why I live where I live, and partially why I do what I do. Obviously, I like what I do, and you know, having my own place and critters and stuff, and living in the middle of nowhere. But it's also, I think it's important just because I think, like I say, it's so easy to get lost in all that horseshit of this music world and this music industry. And then I think the songs are kind of suffer for that a lot of times. And, yeah. And it just eats people up. And I've seen it happen to good friends of mine. I just kind of refuse to allow that to happen. And I don't know, maybe I'm the only person that thinks this way, but, I don't think that's the case. And it's something that I've always felt is kind of an unspoken thing amongst people that play music for a living.
Yeah, like I think you're exactly right. And like I said, I definitely just wanted to highlight that fact that, you know, a lot of people realize, or sorry, maybe don't realize, is the fact that you've been able to do something that you love, which is music, and turn that and, you know, snowball that into allowing yourself to challenge yourself in a different way and do something else that you love, maybe even love more, like you say, and, you know, just get something different out of life that's not just the repeated cycle of touring, playing shows, cutting records.
Yeah. I like to learn the new stuff. It's just kind of, I've always been that way. I like learning, and that's kind of, you know, that's one thing about music that is, if you do it right, you'll never know it all. You know, it's just one of them things that if you have that mentality of there's always something new that I can learn, then you will continue to get better at it and enjoy it. And the same thing goes for, you know, working with animals, climbing on a horse or figuring out, you know, this cattle thing. And that's what I like about that too, is there's every day, even if I, you know, have a complete shit day and maybe I don't get a whole lot done or maybe things don't go as I planned, if you do it right, you can kind of learn, try to learn something new every day. And you know, that whole just knowing that in the back of your head that you never really figure it all out and kind of get to learn a little bit every day. That's kind of what drives me to keep doing it. And the same thing goes for writing songs and playing guitar. You know, I'll never have it all figured out. And I like that. I like that dynamic and that makes me want to keep doing it.
Has it freed you up at all, like personally? And I would assume that it has, but I'm not going to put words in your mouth. Like, has it freed you up at all, like just in your own, you know, mental state and confidence and just how you feel on a day-to-day basis, being off the road and being able to do some different shit that you like and keeping busy working and learning, doing something else. Does that free you up to, do you feel like it's like fed and, you know, helped develop your ability to write songs and make good art by kind of disconnecting from that world a little bit?
I would like to think so. And, you know, obviously it's all subjective and some people might argue otherwise, but I'd like to think so. I know it's freed me up as far as, you know, just being a human being and getting along with yourself, which is a big part of existing, I guess. So I accredit it to that. And it's just as far as general happiness and, you know, feeling of you're kind of on, you know, figuring life out or on the right path or whatever you want to call it. It's definitely gone a long ways towards that. You know, I know that if I was just on the road all the time, like I used to be when I started out, and that was my entire life was just based around touring and recording and only, and that nothing else. I know that I wouldn't be a very happy guy because I've kind of been through that. And, I don't believe I could go back and do it. But as far as the songs go, yeah, I'd like to think that it's sort of helped one way or another. I don't know. Again, it's it's all subjective, so it's hard to say, but I should hope so.
Well, yeah, there's no one size fits all answer for everybody. Somebody, you know, some other artist might completely disagree with that, but it's all what matters to you and what you feel like is helping you keep grinding away.
For sure.
I want to dig into the record now a little bit because I've got the chance to hear it. And
sure,
dude. I personally, my unsolicited opinion is it's your best record yet.
Oh, for sure. Thanks.
I think it's outstanding stuff, and I can't wait for people to hear this fucking thing. Oh. It's great. Great music. You went back to Yellow Dog to record this one, right?
We did, yeah.
What made you want to go back there specifically? Was it just kind of like a comfort thing after doing the last one there?
It's just a cool little place, and it's out of the way. It's kind of out of town. It's in the middle of the hill country, which is probably the prettiest part of Texas. And
yeah.
And I'm familiar with it and familiar with the setup there, and I've used it on a few different projects, and we'll probably, you know, I'll continue to use it just because I like it. And it's an easy place to go and just hang out, and it's a lot different from, you know, being in downtown Nashville or in some city somewhere where, you know, you go out every hour or so and have a smoke in the back alley and watch the traffic go by and then go back in and try to make this album. So at Yellow Dog, it was nice. You know, I get the whole band in there, and they got enough beds to sleep everybody. It's just an old house is all it is. So
yeah. We
all pile in there for, I think it took us 5 or 6 days to cut this thing. And same way we did the last one, everybody just sort of camps out there, and it's right on the Blanco River. So, you know, get done for the day and you go outside and sit, put your feet in the river and drink a beer or whatever, cook up some burgers on the grill and feed everybody and maybe have a few beer and get up in the morning and do it again. Like that's kind of an environment that I think makes it pretty easy to be, you know, make an album and not be distracted.
Really, really loose. Like,
yeah, I think so. And just fun. Makes it fun and not so much like work, even though it is work. I think hopefully that's reflected in the albums I've made there.
Was this one? I never got, but I didn't get to any credits on this one. So did you produce this one again?
I did.
Yeah.
I co-produced it. Me and Pat Lyons, buddy. Okay. Patrick.
I thought it was that, but I didn't want to say it and sound like an idiot. So
yeah, no, me and Pat co-produced it, and it was just sort of, I didn't set out to do that. That's sort of the way it ended up happening. Was we kind of took the reins, the two of us, on different songs, and I deferred to him a lot, and at times he would defer to me, and so we kind of shared the load as far as producing goes, which is a silly thing sometimes. I don't know, I think some people have a different idea of what that really entails versus what it doesn't, but I always enjoy working with Pat. He's a hell of a asset to have in the studio. He's just a guy, you know, he plays everything and he knows his way around a board, and he just has got a great back catalog of music in that giant head of his. So
classic. I was gonna ask, like, pretty, you know, going in there knowing that it's gonna kind of just be you and Pat, kind of like you said, bouncing shit off of each other. How does that compare for you? Or I guess maybe a better question is, you know, earlier in your career when you were having somebody else produce the record for you or do whatever that idea of being a producer is, was that kind of mindset or that ambition to self-produce your stuff, was that always there, or did it kind of come from just learning more, like you say, constantly learning more and more over the years about what, you know, that you'd be capable of doing it yourself, basically? You just kind of look at one of those guys that produced some of the early records and said, hey, like, you know, maybe I could do this, or was that always kind of there?
That was pretty much it, Garrett. Like, you pretty well nailed it. Like, it wasn't, I never set out to think that I could produce a record or that I even wanted to.
Yeah.
But as far as my own stuff, you know, after making a few and working with some guys that are very good producers, it was sort of just that realization of, like, I think I could probably do this and get away with it. As far as, like, you know, like I think I know most of it is knowing what you want to do. It's kind of what I've come to understand, you know, as far as what you have to do to facilitate that, make that happen. But a good majority of it is just having an idea of what you want from a track, or even, you know, an overdub or a performance or whatever it might be in the studio. And then a lot of the toughest work is honestly done by the engineer. That's all like the bells and whistles and what's used on what, as far as equipment and microphones and things like that, getting sounds and stuff. But the actual producing job, I kind of began to figure out that, you know, it's maybe not as, and it's not quite as tough as a, not that it's not a tough job to do. I shouldn't say that, but as far as like my, what I wanted to do, I knew that half the battle was just knowing what you're after, kind of what you're shooting for.
It's got to be easier when you're going in.
So once I figured that out, I thought I'd try to do it myself, and I've been kind of doing it like that ever since, and it works out pretty good because it's one less guy to pay when the record's done. So,
right.
But yeah,
hang on, there we
go. I think I lost you there.
Yeah, I said it's got to be easier when you're going into the studio with the guys that you're out on the road with too, and you're comfortable with those guys already.
Absolutely, yeah. It makes a difference when you know everybody there versus having a bunch of kind of, you know, hired guns on in the studio. It's nice to have the road band out there. Everybody kind of knows each other and knows each other's strengths. And some of the songs too, it might be that some of the songs you're recording, you've already played live, and that kind of goes a long ways towards knowing everyone being on the same page and stuff.
They kind of know what you're expecting too, because they've played however many shows with you. I wanted to talk too about, you know, this. And again, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about, like, just fans entitlement, or what, you know, projecting that entitlement or whatever. And it wouldn't have been too long after the announcement came out that this one would be released on your longtime label, La Honda Records, in collaboration now with RCA Records. And you had a kind of a series of Instagram stories saying, like, you know, basically something along the lines of, you know, I'm always going to be in control of my own shit, and this doesn't mean I'm selling out or some weird whatever accusation that somebody may have come up with for you. But
I'm guilty sometimes of letting my temper maybe get the best of me when I should maybe just not say it. But wow. Yeah, it's funny, you know. There's kind of this thing, this other, I guess, stigma or whatever you might call it, about when you know, a lot of people hate it, and I don't know if I understand this either. A lot of people get upset when, if they like somebody, if they like an artist or a singer or whatever, and they kind of find them before they blow up, and then they blow up later, they kind of, there's this whole thing where people don't like that. They get kind of like almost upset,
like I said earlier, it's like, I knew Colter Wall back in, you know, 2015. He's mine. You know what I mean? It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I think that's exactly it, Garrett. I think you hit the nail right on the head again, where it's almost like a claim. Like,
yeah,
I knew about it before you did, so I'm more of a fan than you are.
I'm cooler than you.
Yeah, it's like a status thing for some people, I guess. Like,
100%.
I was looking back 2015. I was listening when he just had SoundCloud demos out, or, you know, whatever the hell. And it's like,
I've been guilty of that as a fan, just because. But it sometimes comes from a place of, like, you know, somebody's being a real dumbass about something, more coming to somebody's defense rather than claiming entitlement over something or someone.
Right, and it's, I don't know, it's a weird thing because I understand it too on a level, and I get why some people would feel. It's almost like a defensive thing. Like, I don't want to. And again, they're worried about, you know, like with what you're talking about, somebody signs with a major label or something like that. Then, you know, the initial concern is like, shit, they're going to change this thing that I liked, and they're this band or this person that I like now, it's in somebody else's hands, and they're going to, you know, mold it the way that they, you know, it'd be more of a commercial thing or whatever. Right.
Or take advantage of you somehow.
Yeah, and so it's almost like a defensive thing. Like, don't fuck this thing up that I care about.
Don't fuck up my thing.
don't fuck up this thing that I've, you know, I've poured my heart and soul into, that I care about and that I've supported. Right. So I get that. But it's sometimes a little, I think just a little misguided as far as, the way that the music world works nowadays, as far, and like, you know, the control that labels have and the deals that labels cut nowadays. And I think your average music listener probably just isn't aware of it. And it's not like it's their fault either. There's really no way they would be if they're not sort of in the thick of it. And, I don't know. Like I say, it's kind of a misguided thing a lot of times, but I understand where it comes from. And I guess I was just, you know, when I started to see all these things pop up about, like, you know, he's sold his soul or whatever, and right. Now he's part of RCA and he's going to change. I guess it was sort of, I almost took it personal, which I didn't need to, and I shouldn't have, but it was kind of like, well, I would hope that if you're a fan of my music and if you've been following along all this time, that you would know that, you know, this stuff's too important to me to let it get, you know, messed with or okay. Let it be changed by any outside source, regardless of what label I'm on or you know. And a lot of people, I think, also thought were under the impression that I've never been on a record label before, which just isn't true, because I've always almost always had a label. If they've just been smaller ones, you know, ones that people might not have heard of. So it's like, you know, I've never had any sort of outside counseling from any kind of label or industry person about, you need to be doing this or you need to be doing that. It's always been, you know, and I wouldn't ever let that happen. So I think in that moment, I was kind of irritated because I thought that people would maybe kind of just assume that about me and my stuff. But at the same time, you know, it's not like they know me or anything. So I guess I maybe didn't have a right to get as grumpy about it as I did, but I did lose a little bit of patience with what I was hearing from lots of them folks that were expressing their concern about, you know, me selling out or whatever. And I also just thought it was weird because, you know, it's funny, this, so I signed this RCA thing, I don't know, I think it was in March, maybe. Was it March or April?
Wasn't it while we were in Saskatoon?
Yeah, I don't know, but it was sometime kind of into this spring is when I finally, you know, it had been kind of talked about or whatever, and, you know, it's all a whole deal with paperwork and lawyers and this, that, and other, but we recorded this album, the new album that's coming out next month. I recorded it in October, so some people were voicing concern when the singles come out. They're like, oh, we can already hear that RCA has changed you, and that's kind of what set me off, because that was, that's pure ignorance, because, you know, I recorded this thing months before I ever signed with the record label, and it's like there's some kind of, like I said, produced it myself and did all this work and poured all this work into it, and to have somebody say that kind of fired me up a little bit, and maybe I was a little grumpier than I needed to be, but
there's some kind of weird high-pitched whine that only they can hear when RCA, when it's good and put out on RCA. It's
exactly. So
fucking dog whistle.
So that was something that I felt like maybe I should clear up online, since I have, you know, I'm not all over the social media stuff, and a lot of it's run by our buddy Travis and some of the other management that I got on my team, but, you know, I still have access to it, so I thought maybe I'll just hop on here and clear some of this up for some of these good folks that seem to be maybe a little misinformed. But like I say, I understand why people get this way when they hear news like this, but also, you know, I think on some level you also have to be happy, I guess, for whoever it is, because it is, you know, a measurement of some success.
Absolutely.
If somebody can have a bigger platform to send off their music to, then I think that as a fan, you should be happy for said artist or person on some level, even if you are worried about, you know, changes, which again, I understand, but it's always a weird dynamic between when you decide that you really like something and you really like somebody's music, then people get possessive over it, I think, I guess, is sort of what happens. And I understand that. So it's one of them kind of tricky dynamics.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that was well put. I think it was well put that day on Instagram, and I think it was well put just now.
Well, thanks, man.
But yeah, man. I mean, I don't know. It's I kind of wanted to talk about some of the songs, but it's kind of hard when these people haven't heard them yet, obviously. But
right. You
know, some standouts, obviously. And man, I was so excited to hear the recorded versions. Because I'd listened to you play them live so much, and I mean, I knew all the fucking words before before I listened to the record. But I wanted to talk to you a bit about specifically, you know, maybe just dig into Ian Tyson a little bit. Like, you know, you put the Coyote and the Cowboy on this album, and you're playing that one live for, well, I'm pretty sure all of those runs this year. And something that I looked forward to hearing you play every night was Summer Wages, and eventually that worked its way into being the encore song. But I just figured it might be a good idea to kind of talk about Ian a little bit, since we've unfortunately lost him now. And you know, what went into putting that one on this album?
Yeah, it was that song I'd been playing for a long time, actually, like for a few years, going back before all the pandemic junk and all that.
Right.
It had kind of worked its way into the set, and to me it's like a classic Canadian bar, like Western Canadian bar song, honky tonk song. It's just like, if you're in, like, you know, if you're in Alberta, or you're in any small town bar in Alberta, Saskatchewan, or even Manitoba, you know, maybe parts of the interior of BC, and that song comes on, it's kind of like, you know, somebody puts that on the jukebox. It's just like, you know, set them up and knock them back kind of song that's kind of unique to this area. And Ian had lots of those, just because he was such a force as far as in Canada, and like specifically Canadian music and Canadian stories and songs and just the whole thing. He was kind of just the king of that, especially, you know, out west here. That was sort of his wheelhouse, and that's partially why he's such a big influence for me, amongst many other reasons. It's like, that's kind of what I tried to do too. I'm really proud to be from this area, and I'm proud to live in Southwest Saskatchewan, or, you know, more broadly Western Canada. I really like it. I really like it here, and I think that there's lots of it's kind of an unknown, and it still is to a great degree of people, as far as, you know, our culture and our history and stuff, and a lot of what we're about and what life is like here, isn't really talked about or celebrated as widely as, you know, you think about how many songs are there about Texas. You know, I always say, like, and I love Texas, so I've spent lots of time there too, but then think about, like, you know, there's not really, it's not comparable. Partially, I guess that's just because it's more obscure and there's a lot fewer people that live out here. It's kind of a big empty place, and that's part of the reason why it's great, I think. Yeah. But Ian was always really good about that, and he kind of was one of the few that was telling those stories and painting the picture of, hey, this is where we live, and this is what it's like here. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool. You know, there's some cool stuff about it, and I want you to know about it because I like it. And that was sort of always, he was so good at that, you know. And he sang songs about Mexico and sang songs about, you know, the Southwest stuff and all over. But they really, the ones that really shine through to me are always the ones that make me think about, you know, home. And so, you know, I try to do the same thing with my stuff. And Ian's such a hero. Such a hero of mine. And then, but yeah, anyways, I guess I had to, I had it in my mind to record this song, that Ian song that's on the album. I had it in my mind to record it before I heard the news about him. And then it was funny because I figured I was going to put on the record, but then, the title track, Little Songs, the first verse of that song is about Ian.
Yeah.
The old man in the foothills. And I had also written that before I heard that he'd passed. But it was very, it was weird because it was very shortly, you know, I think it was maybe a matter of a few days or like a week or something. And then I seen it in the news and it was like, you know, what the hell? Like I knew he had been unwell. I had heard from some friends that he was kind of in and out of the hospital and, you know, he's no spring chicken either. He's getting pretty up there in age, but, didn't expect him to die or anything. And, but anyways, I'd written that first verse and, you know, old man in the foothills, if he ain't dead, he's living there still, or is the opening lyric to the title track of this album. And I kind of almost had, you know, I'd written that and I heard the news and I almost thought, well, shit, there goes that song because he is dead now.
Yeah.
But I opted to record it anyways, because, you know, that song is just kind of a broad, I guess, broad stroke across. And it's just everything I just finished talking about, you know, this part of the world and the kinds of people you find in this part of the world. And so I started out with kind of writing about Ian and with what I'd known about him, all these years of being a fan and listening to him. And then, you know, and then the second verse kind of goes on to another figure or another person. But it was a weird deal because, like I say, I had written that and I knew I was going to record Coyote and Cowboy too. And then a few weeks later, got the news that Ian passed. But I'm glad that we recorded that song his, and I'm glad that we recorded the title track, and that it ended up being the title track, because it's one of my favorites from the record, and I think
me too.
Any way I can pay homage to that guy, I can't do it enough. I've recorded a few of his songs over the years, and I expect I'll probably keep doing it just because he's pretty important to me.
Yeah. It did. I mean, listening through this album, that was one of the comments that I had. I don't know if there's a song on it, maybe with the exception of like Evangelina, obviously, that, you know, I didn't get a reference, or at least, and maybe it's just a feeling that I got because I am from the West, you know, too. We're from a similar part of the world, but you know, I would say every single one of these songs, with the exception of Evangelina, obviously being that cover, you know, kind of gave me that same feeling of home, or at least a reference to home, or something that I was like, oh, hey, you know, I know what that is. And some other people may not.
But yeah.
I feel like it is, I can hear listening to the album just how all these things that we talked about, you know, how you just sound comfortable. You sound comfortable singing about home. You sound comfortable singing about what you know. And I mean, I could hear that the whole way through. Like I said, with every single song on the record, there's at least a reference or something that made me get that feeling.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. And that's, you know, it's not like a, sometimes I'll use the term target audience, which usually jokingly, but you know, this is music that's made, like everything I put out, I hope that everyone, no matter where they're from and what kind of background they have, can enjoy it. And I would never go as far to say, like, you know, if you don't know what this is about, then don't even bother listening to it, because it doesn't do anybody good. And therein lies the challenge too. Like, you know, if you're writing a song about a specific area, obviously you know that the people from there might pick things out, or, you know, just for an example, like yourself, what we just talked about, you know, there's things that you get that some other people might not with these songs some of these songs anyways. But, you know, therein lies another challenge of like, well, how can this maybe appeal to somebody that maybe doesn't live in this area, or maybe hadn't had this kind of lifestyle or been this experience that maybe the song is referencing or whatever. And how can I, you know, through writing or through the way that I presented, I guess, in the song, then how can a guy go about, you know, having some common ground, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And I enjoy, you know, the challenge of that is fun. And I'm not saying that maybe sometimes I don't meet that challenge, and it's hard to do, but I think that's part of what makes good writing is, like, you know, it's easy to make a specific reference to something, and that's the person that you're referencing, or you know, like I say, a person that's from there, that's lived that, gets it. Well, of course they do. But how can you make it a little bit more universal in a way that other people, even if they don't get it, can kind of understand? And that's something that I try to do more and more. And I try to do it with these songs in the record too, where you can kind of, you know, reach a lot of ears that way, even if maybe they're not the what would be the target audience per se. Because you want everybody to be able to, anyone that listens to it, you hope that they can enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of maybe one of the smartest things I've ever said on this podcast, kind of unintentionally, honestly, because I'm not a very smart guy. But I was talking about Kentucky, talking to some artist from Kentucky. I don't even actually particularly remember who it is or who it was at the time, but it was before I'd actually visited Kentucky and been there. And I'd made the comment that his or her songs, and I can't remember. I don't want to say and be wrong, but whatever. An early episode, I'd said his or her songs had made me feel like I missed a place that I'd never been to before.
Yeah,
and that's kind of, I feel like that's kind of what you're referencing there, trying to.
Yeah, I think if you can accomplish that, then I think you've done a pretty good job with a song or with an album or with anything. You know, I think that. That's a pretty good feather in a guy's cap if you can accomplish that sort of thing. And that's something I strive for. And like I say, I don't know if I always hit that mark, but it's something that the older I get, the more I do this songwriting thing, the more I try to kind of ride that line a little bit as far as, you know, reaching all kinds of people, not just the people that, you know, the obvious folks that, you know, are going to get all the subject matter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, shit, man, I can let you go here. You've been sitting in the truck for a while now, so
yeah.
Right. Not to out you that you're recording this sitting in your truck.
All right, it's a
nice quiet place.
It is. Well, it's, I'm in the middle of some parking lot in Medicine Hat. just about finished with my town chores here before I can get the hell out of here.
This was one of them.
Yeah, this was one of them, because I know I have service here, so I think
yeah. Yeah, no, man, I appreciate you doing this. Thank you for chatting with me for a while, and thanks for continuing to write and perform and record great music, man. And there's a lot of people out that are going to be really excited to hear from you, because you don't do a ton of interviews and stuff like that, but you know, we talked a lot about fans, but you know, Even the bad ones are still not the bad ones, but even the ones that sometimes sometimes piss you off or piss whoever off, right? Any artist deals with that, but you know, everybody still loves your music, and you know, that shows in the growth and how it's all a part of your career and a part of that snowball effect that you've had over the years too.
Well, I hope so. And I never mean to sound ungrateful. You know, the more people listening, the better. So I hope that everybody knows that I'm glad to have them. Like I say, no matter where they're from or what they do, and they're more than welcome to pick up one of my records and give it a spin. And you know, it's all, I don't know. There's no elitism there. It's just like, you know, the more the merrier. So, but yeah, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Thanks for doing this, man. And everybody out there listening, July 14th, Little Songs, the new album from Mr. Coulter Wall here, will be available for listening on all of the fucking name something that plays music. It will be on there.
All of them. Every single.
I always hate that when somebody's just like, well, where can we find your music? Well, I don't know. There's a lot of places.
Spotify, Apple.
All of the shit.
YouTube. Yeah. You can probably pirate more if you want.
Yeah. Some guy's got some burnt CDs on the corner.
Yeah, more than likely. Yeah.
Exactly.
If you see my mom somewhere, she'll probably have a copy of it. She might sell it to you.
Yeah, there you go. A big markup, though.
Big markup for the CDs she keeps in her purse.
Good stuff, man. Well, thanks again for doing this, man. And we'll see you soon. We'll see you later this summer. See you in about a month.
Yes, sir. We'll see you in Whitefish, Montana.
Sounds good. Yeah, Under the Big Sky. Everybody get on out to that one.
Yeah, that's going to be a good time.
That will be a good time. All right, brother. Thank you.
Right on, man.